appreciate your talk, and I agree with everything except maybe one point, and I noticed that you were careful to say I believe or I think on that particular point, and that is whether a person could be scripturally divorced and then remarried and be a qualified elder. I forget exactly what you said. You said that at the very least you did not think it would be
expedient,
right, and a few other reasons. But I think we kind of have to use some of the same arguments you made for the faithful children leaving years later and their father still being qualified. You know, you said don't make a blanket statement about some of those things or consider everything on its own merits. I think we have to do the same with that as well. Because, you know, in the Old Testament we have an example of God marrying Israel. And I don't believe that God was at fault in any way for the immorality of Israel. Or another example is Hosea. I don't think there was any, you know, thing that we could criticize Hosea for at all. And I think the same thing is true if they meet that one wife qualification. I think there's people in this audience who have been scripturally divorced. There is nothing that those people could have done at all to make their situation better, and they lived a great lives. You want to comment on that? No.
I agree with that, and I appreciate the spirit in which you asked it. You know, that there needs to be an awareness as much as possible to know what happened in those cases. I think it's we all feel uncomfortable whenever you go into a situation like that and say, what happened? You know, in trying to determine guilt in cases like that. But for a man to rule in the church or to oversee the church as an elder, I believe his family life must be above reproach. And if a local congregation determines that's the case in their man, then I would never, I don't think,
I agree,
you know,
that.
Fault them, yeah, for choosing that man, all of the things being equal, all of the things being in place.
And then just one final question. Does all a man's children have to be Christians? Could he have, you know, three Christians that are late teenagers or in their 20s and then have a late child later on in life? And could he be ordained?
I'm glad you asked that because I don't think I did address that. I meant to. But my understanding is that all of the children must not be. This would be my further understanding. The Bible doesn't say all children. It says with faithful children. Now, if a man has five kids, and two of them are, and three aren't, and they're of age, I think that would disqualify the man. If he has four children, and three of them are old enough to be, and then one is born late in life, or something like that, I don't think he has to resign until that child gets old enough to obey the gospel. So, again, I would look at that on a case-by-case situation, and the trend, the rule of his house is that his children are Christians. Would be my understanding of that. And one old enough to be a Christian ought to be.
Richard Booner and then David Sands.
Jimmy asked some of the questions that I had, but one thing is, how far back in one's past do we have to go? You know, sometimes the person may have been divorced 30 years earlier and remarried, and so that really has no bearing on his, if it was scriptural, on what the attitude of the congregation would be. Or so I would think he would be blameless at that point. Generally, we would think so. Let me see, though, you when you were talking about a house, and I don't know if I followed all of this, If a man's children all grow up and they're out of his house, and then the church is considering him for the eldership, does he have faithful children then? If they obeyed the gospel, but your rule was that once they're adults, if they leave the church, they are. That's not to be taken into consideration.
No. I'm sorry, Richard. I didn't mean to leave the impression that it should not be taken into consideration. There are some hypothetical situations here that we have to look at maybe explain what I mean by that. If a man of five children, and they all grow to adulthood, and one of those five chooses to leave the church, I would not impugn that man on the basis of one doing that. If all of his children grow to adulthood and they all leave the church, then yes, that does say something about their training when they were young. But that's why I avoid making a blanket policy that once they're gone, that no longer is a reflection on the father. That's not what I'm saying. But I don't think we can hold a godly man accountable, you know, and blame him for the actions of a child who is now 40 years old, who's been away from home for 20 years, and whose circumstance is very, very different than when they were under his oversight.
Okay, now, one more and then I'm done. What if you have five teenagers and four of them have obeyed the gospel? Is it a waiting game? You're sitting there waiting for the next one to obey the gospel. He or she has not. It seems like that. I mean, he does have faithful children. Do all of them have to be obedient to the gospel if they're of the age of accountability and still living under the roof?
The Bible says, let him not have a child who is accused of riot or unruly in the King James. I would look at the disposition of that last child, I think, and if that was a rebellious child, I do believe that, and my understanding now is that one rebellious child in the home environment could disqualify a man. If that child, on the other hand, is, you know, I'm not going to say that if he's 14 or 15 and hasn't been baptized yet, that he's, you know, got a bad attitude or he's riotous, because there are people we know who wait later to make that decision. But if that child, as a teenager, is respectful, obedient, submissive, I don't know that I personally could disqualify a man on that basis or say you're going to have to wait until that one child comes along. I think that put an awful lot of pressure on that one child to do something maybe that they're not ready for, or they might do it for the wrong reason. And so I would hate to publicize that was, you know, a motive for holding off in a case like that.
Okay. David Stand and then Ellen Bonifay.
Glenn, I appreciate your talk very much. The question I have is similar to what Richard asked. In the case of children that have left home and that are now adults, becoming rebellious and are not faithful anymore, a man would still be qualified as an elder, could still meet the qualifications?
Say it again. Please ask it again.
Okay. If we have, say your teenage sons obey the gospel, they grow up, they're 40 years old, and then become rebellious and not faithful anymore to the Lord, for whatever reasons, the man is still qualified to be an elder. Are you saying that?
Without making a blanket statement, I would say the likelihood is very good that he would still be able to serve.
Because he doesn't have any control over them or anything? Okay. I'd like to read a passage from 1 Samuel, the second chapter, and then also in 1 Samuel chapter 3. And here's the case of Eli, the priest of God. Verse 22 of 1 Samuel chapter 2. It says, now when Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto Israel, and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and he said unto them, why do ye such things? For I hear of your evil dealings by all this people. Nay, my sons, it is no good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people to transgress. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat him? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay him, or slay them, rather. My statement concerning that is that these were Hophni and Phinehas, the sons of Eli, and not only were they full-grown men, they were also the priests of God, but it is obvious that they were immoral, and he he spoke to them about it. And I would say they were unfaithful, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Okay. And then at verse 11 of the next chapter.
Easy questions, by the way.
Okay. That was an easy one. And then at verse 11 of the next chapter, it says, "And the Lord said to Samuel, Behold, I will do a thing in Israel at which both the ears of everyone that heareth it shall tingle. In that day I will perform against Eli all things which I have spoken concerning his house. When I begin, I will also make an end." Now, I would say here that he is including Hophni and Phinehas in his house. It says then in verse 13, "For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not." He failed to restrain them, even though they were full age men. Eli didn't carry out his responsibility as a father. I believe he was still responsible. And then at verse 14 it says, "And therefore I am sworn unto the house of Eli, that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be purged with sacrifice nor offering forever." And I take by that Eli, we'll talk about disqualification. It seems to me that Eli was disqualified, and that because he restrained them not. Now I'm saying then that just as Eli was disqualified for his inability to control even his adult sons, and I would say that could be a precedent. You know, if you want to comment about that concerning the eldership.
I think my comment would go back, first of all, to chapter 2, verse 12, the beginning of the context that you shared with us, where it says the sons of Eli were corrupt. They did not know the Lord. Eli would never have been qualified to be an elder, because I think his children never qualified him. He made fault from the very beginning. So your statement that he was disqualified because his adult children, you know, he didn't restrain them. I would say that his kids were bad from the beginning. He had fault in his relationship. Now, again, I said he wouldn't qualify as an elder in the Lord's church. Was he a prophet? Yes. Would he, or a priest? But would he be a elder in the Lord's church? I would say no. And I guess with regard to logistically, how do we in our culture today restrain an adult child? Is it feasible to think that a father, 80 years old or 70 years old, again hypothetically, can restrain in some way or make a 50 or 60 year old man do something? I think that the error was in the beginning when he failed to teach them and bring them up in the right way.
Okay, Alan Bonifay and David Wright.
Got Rodney Wade up here too. I appreciate what you said about that, Glenn. I think there's more to this story of Samuel and Eli than we just talked about. First of all, you remember when Eli died, he fell over backwards, you know, and he died, broke his neck because he was very heavy. Well, the sins that his sons were committing was taking the very best meat out of the pot. That was one of the sins they were committing. And Eli was sitting at the table eating with them. And I think the point of all that is Eli was not restraining his sons and was actually participating in their actions. By the same token, Samuel's sons also went bad. I couldn't find the scripture real quick here as we were just talking. But Samuel was not held responsible because he did try to restrain his sons. And I think that what you said is correct, and that is we need to evaluate each situation. If a person's sons, children leave the church, that may disqualify him, depending on how it affects the local congregation and depending on what they're doing. and also, I wanted to address that more. You said earlier, and I respect that, you said, for example, on a man being divorced and remarried, you said, I believe it would be inexpedient. And I think that brings up something that we need to talk about, and that is this appointment of elders, the selection of elders, I should say, is not the matter of what an evangelist thinks. It's not the matter of what a leader thinks or what one person thinks. It's what the congregation thinks. And this is a process that is the collective judgment of the local church. Now, they need to be taught, and they need to be taught what the qualifications mean and the work is and all of that. But having taught them and they make their selection, it may be that the congregation overwhelmingly selects someone that I personally have reservations about. I don't think that gives me the right to overthrow the congregation's collective judgment. And I think we need to be very careful about that. Also, I think you may need to revise your statement just a little bit, where you talked about in divorce, we always assume there's wrong on both sides. That is an assumption. God was not wrong when he, on any side, when he divorced Israel. Israel was wrong entirely. Now, in most cases, or many cases, what you said may be correct, but it's not always correct that there's wrong on both sides. And a person divorced and remarried scripturally is the husband of one wife. Whether or not he's qualified to be an elder or not is up to the local congregation and this particular situation. Would you comment on some of that?
First of all, that my statement that in the breakup of a marriage relationship, I did not mean to include in that God's relationship with Israel.
I knew you didn't mean that.
So I, of course, embrace what you have just said, that I think it's Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 2 that addresses that, that says that I have brought up children, not the marriage, but the children. With regard to God's relationship with Israel, father-child relationship, I have brought up children. They rebelled against me. And no one would say that God was a bad father, you know, and blame him for that. What I intend to suggest to you is that when a marriage fails, we have to assume, I assume that both parties contributed to that failed marriage. Now, could one person save it against the will of the other? No. But in human experience, in human relationships, I believe that generally, not exclusively is always good, but generally, yes, I would be inclined to think that both partners contributed to that failed marriage in some way. And so I would want to know about that before I recognized in a congregation where I was a member, you know, a man as an elder who had that situation in his background.
I can buy in general, but Hosea was not at fault for what Gomer did.
Okay.
In that one case.
Since you're sitting right here next to me, Ronnie Wade, and then George, and then David Reichner.
I'd like to reserve about 2 minutes at the very end to comment. I want to go back and revisit something Richard asked about earlier, about how far back do we go.
I want to also refer to something Richard said, or at least implied. Here's a man with four children who are members of the church. The fifth child is a teenager who is, let's say, a late bloomer. Good kid. Very good kid, hasn't obeyed the gospel. If I understand you right, we wouldn't put him in as an elder. The church could choose to put him in as an elder.
I think the local congregation could make that.
Okay, now then, this late bloomer never blooms. He's a good kid, but he never blooms. He never obeys the gospel. Do we then take him out as an elder?
I would not, on the basis of that, myself. The question was asked earlier, must all of the children, you know, be faithful Christians? And I do not believe that's what's in the qualification. The word all is not there. It says faithful children.
So then a man could have two and two. Two could obey the gospel. Two could not obey the gospel. He could still be an elder.
Well, I will not answer that, Ron, except this way, please. That I said, based on my understanding, I would look at that on a case-by-case situation. If the predominance is that his children are not Christians, then no, I couldn't recognize that man as an elder. But in the case that, the hypothetical case we've looked at, the preponderance of evidence suggests that he has raised his children in keeping with this qualification, and that they are becoming Christians when they're of age. And if in the local congregation that man is recognized as having met this qualification, I would not personally be able to disqualify him on the basis of one who did not, one of several. If one does and one doesn't, if he's got two, and one does and one doesn't, I would have a question about that.
Okay, but if the preponderance, I'm not trying to back you in the corner. I'm trying to understand what your position is.
My position would be, if the preponderance of the evidence is that this man has raised his children in keeping with this qualification, and that you're not asking me to do this, but I'm kind of taking a leap to say that, from my personal perspective, the only way that I could personally recommend such a man as an elder, if there was only one, if there was one that didn't, you know, if there's two or three in a case like that, I begin to question how diligently he has brought them along.
George, make it.
But I don't, you know, I don't have a Bible passage for that specifically.
I just wanted to make an observation. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 5 says, "For if he knows not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God?" And I just think it needs to be pointed out that these children should be Christians because of how they were reared in their home, and not in spite of how they were reared. Because my sister and I are faithful in the church, but it is in spite of how we were raised up. And you can have a man who had all of his kids are faithful in the church, but it is not because of how they were reared up. And I think the church needs to take that into consideration.
Okay, David Reiser, go over here.
I still believe, like David, that there is something there in regards to Eli. But to me also, in response to what you said to him, how would an 80-year-old or a 60-year-old discipline adults or whatever? I think that's, we're dealing with adults in congregations. And I think that out of respect, is how that would be done. I think that the father would have respect, and the children would respect the father and would listen to the father in regards to that. I would like to refer you to a New Testament in Romans, the first chapter, verse 30. Now there it talks about all sorts of wicked things. And I think it's dealing with adult people. And one of those wicked things is disobedient children. I don't think that's talking about children that are home, but I think that's talking about disobedient children in general. At least those disobedient children were doomed to a devil's hell. How would you respond to that?
With regard to the adult children and how to discipline them, I believe that, in a passing way, I did address this when I said that a man with adult children who became unfaithful, does he countenance that behavior or does he rebuke it openly? In a case like that, I would respect a man who could call his son or daughter by name and say, "That's wrong, and I don't tolerate it." But as far as forcing them or in some way making them come around, I would have to resist very strongly the idea that you can make somebody do that, what they don't want to do. Does that address what you were asking, or did I leave something off? You said that you felt like discipline could be done through respect because the children would respect that aged. Clearly not. It seems to me that if they did have respect for the wishes of their father, they would not have gone off into the wrong behavior in the first place. So respect for him, I don't think would cause them to repent and come back.
Well, we're talking about an eldership, is what I'm saying. And the same type of leading respect should be there in both cases.
Okay, there's several more we want to ask questions, but we don't have time. And so if you want a couple of minutes.
Richard asked, how far back do we go, you know, in the case of a person to find out if something in their past would disqualify them? It was interesting to me in studying this that Paul and Barnabas went on a missionary tour, came back home. They went out sometime later to go back and check those churches. And historians and scholars tell us it's probably about 3 years. Some of those churches were about 3 years old when they went back on a missionary tour. And in those churches, they found men of who knows what kind of pasts who qualified for the eldership in those congregations. Acts 14:23, I believe it is, when they had appointed for them elders in every church and had prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord on whom they had believed. So these churches where Paul and Barnabas had gone were not very old. Some of them maybe 3 years old. Some may have been less than that. And so the idea being that these churches composed of Jews, converted Jews and Gentiles, very young, were able to provide men who could meet the requirements of elders. And I think this argues very strongly that it can be done today if it could be done back then. I don't think that these men necessarily had gifts of inspiration that qualified them. There's nothing in the text that would indicate they qualified so quickly because of some miraculous intervention. And so I believe that men are able to be qualified today and have to be qualified, but I realize that in each congregation there has to be some, what one author said, a reasonable objectivity. And I think that's what I would say in these cases. We have to be reasonable. We can't set aside the scriptural qualifications, but let's look to the intent and what kind of man did Paul and the Holy Spirit mean to sit before us here as an elder.